This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball.
Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
It's Ron Coomer on deck.
And Ronnie's been red hot. He's been in the zone.
Ron Coomer.
Let's see if the Cubs can respond.
We're helping him out.
Coomer drives one into right center field. Long run, Pierre. Pierre dives, misses it. It bounces all the way to the wall.
That's a nice knock for the old hometown boy, isn't it?
Chicago Cubs radio analyst.
What a ball game. The wait is over. Right? It is over. The Cubs are World Series champions. How does that sound, partner?
1999 American League All-Star.
From the American League All-Stars. Infielder Ron Coomer.
The Coom Dog with Mully and Haw.
Woohoo!
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Ron Coomer is one of God's great men. He joins us on The Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Good morning, Ron. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Mikey, David, how are you boys doing today?
Doing well.
You know, we're a little disappointed today because we heard that Nico is not traveling to Japan. And, I mean, I get it. It's a little bit early. They're going to break camp, and they're going to open the season against the Dodgers. You just kind of were hoping everyone would be up and running, and we've been told that very unlikely that Matt Shaw makes that trip. So you're missing two-fourths of your infield, or the projected starting infield, when you turn up in Japan. That's not as ideal. And again, there's a second opening day, the domestic opening day, and then there'll be a home opener. So hopefully you see plenty of Nico and plenty of Matt Shaw, but it's just a kind of a bummer they're not going to be there to open the season in Japan.
It's a lot of openers, Mike.
It is. It's a lot of openers.
It's like Vegas. Opening night.
We get a lot of openers. It was kind of expected, to be honest. Like, when I got down here or out here, I had a chance to talk to Nico the very first day, and, you know, his work was still somewhat limited in what he was doing. So you just kind of knew that was probably going to be the case for Nico. I would anticipate the Cubs, so you're going to miss those two guys in the games in Japan. And this is straight from Counts and talking to him. This was a week ago. He told me, the lineup may look a little different in Japan than it does opening day. We should be at full strength come opening day here in Arizona when we play the Diamondbacks. So, he still wasn't sure yet, but you're kind of hedging your bet, looking and going, okay. So then you've got to give some other guys, the birdies and Nicky Lopez and some of those guys, a little more of a look at different positions to see what you got maybe for the series in Japan. So that's just where you stand. I think Nico's in really good spirits. I see him on a daily basis almost at the ballpark, and he seems fine, and I'm really excited to see Shaw, the guy that really needs to be out there playing and showing what he can do is Matt Shaw. So Bruce kind of broke that out here yesterday or the day before that Shaw might play this weekend. So I'll look forward to seeing him play on Sunday, hopefully.
We all will, because we have not seen him yet, and that's going to be a lot of fun to watch him kind of develop. But if he's on a pace to maybe not open until it's back in the States. Coom, take a stab at the opening day infield. Is Nicky Lopez a guy at second base? Do you think that Gage Workman makes a team and is it third or is it John Birdie? What do you think the opening day infield will look like?
Well, it's a good question. I still think it's, you know, it's still up in the air, David.
Wait, Coon, before you finish, which of the openers?
The first one.
Oh, okay.
The first one.
He's
being difficult.
I am being difficult.
Yeah, right? That's a lot of lining up on the lines for games, right?
Yeah.
You know, can't we just do that once or twice? Not three times? Wow. And, you know, we got the exhibition games. You know you're going to do it then, too, in Japan. We're going to have a lot of that, a lot of ceremony for these ball games. But I think you're looking at a guy, Workman looks very good. He showed, you know, he's a big, strong kid and really can pound the ball and use the other side of the diamond, which to me was very encouraging. He's hit an opposite field homer. He's hit a couple opposite field doubles. And I thought, huh. And Counts seems to think his best position, I haven't really seen him play a lot defensively, but he goes, his best position's third base. He's third baseman. And I go, okay, well, you know, he's out of options, basically, is what you're saying. He either makes the team or he goes back. So, Nicky Lopez, you kind of know what you're getting. Nicky's a really nice young guy from Naperville Central, and, you know, you really pull for the local guys. And I'm hoping he makes the team and makes the team going to Japan. And I think Birdie is one of those people, you know what you get. So I would anticipate Lopez probably being on the club going to Japan. You know, so you got three kind of utility guys would probably make the team going to Japan, would be my guess. I'm not 100% sure, but that would be a guess.
They've had a remarkable opening to camp. They are unbeaten. They have a couple of draws, but no one has been able to beat the Cubs. And I think that's a good thing. Do you need to lose sometimes so you learn something, or... What's your take on the way that they're getting their work done and still not getting beaten?
Yeah, I'm one of those people that I don't really pay too much attention to the record in spring training, although you want to win every day. Mm-hmm. You don't want to lose. And I think what's happened is the young guys have played very well offensively. They've done their job. When the young guys come into the game, the second half of the ballgame, they've put some at-bats together. They've situational hit. They've drove in driving in runs, and it's been pretty good. So the Cubs have won some games late that were, you know, going back and forth a little bit or not a lot of run scoring. So that's a positive when you see the young guys contributing and doing well. But I don't pay close attention to the win-loss record. If I'm watching the games, if I'm watching day after day, which I am obviously down here, I just want to see how well guys are playing. And I think you're looking at a lot of the regulars you're going to see every day playing very well. Happer's playing outstanding, looks good at the plate. Tucker looks good at the plate. Both of those guys just missed hitting home runs into the wind yesterday here. So the team looks good.
Kelvin and Kevin Alcantara, Coom, has open some eyes, and I think he probably is ticketed for Iowa, but I just wonder, he's gotten a lot of attention, he's had a ton of success. What do you think about his ceiling, and has your opinion of him changed this spring?
I don't know if you can put a ceiling on that kid, David. He's one of those kids, you know, he's big, tall, rangy, strong. You know, he's gotten he's had some great at-bats. He's, you know, does a lot of things well. So, at the end of the day, for all these young kids, when you play well, you open eyes. And he's playing well, and he's opening eyes, and they knew he's talented, but you're like, hey, force them to make tough decisions. That's the way, you know, when you speak to young players in the minor leagues, force them to make tough decisions on you because you're playing so well. Every other team is looking at that, too, and he is doing that. He's, you know, and he gives you some options because he can do a lot in outfield, too. So it's really cool to see him play well and kind of take this opportunity, even though the outfield's pretty stacked, and make the Cubs make some tough decisions in what they're doing.
What is it that you like most about this team? You know, we had this conversation about the White Sox, and we decided, you know, can't hit, can't pitch, worried about the bullpen, and their defense is awful. You know, you kind of there is no unit that you say, oh, well, they always have that. The Cubs seem to be the opposite story, but is there one element of their team that appeals to you more than others from what you've seen thus far?
I would say it's an intangible. It's not something that you can see on the field, like, because a guy's fast or he can throw harder. I think it's an intangible. I think this group has a confidence about them, because you got a lot of guys that have had success in our league, and some of them have had a lot of success in the league. And there's like, there's almost that something to play for, and you're looking and you're like, there's a lot of good players here. You know, you don't have that extreme superstar guy. You know, Sammy was here at camp, and Sammy Sosa was a legitimate superstar when he was playing. They don't have one of those guys. Tucker's a very good player.
Yeah.
But you got some very good players. But there's that thing, Mike, that I'm seeing day to day, and you're like, these guys are, there's something there. And that's an intangible that you don't see all the time. But as an ex-player, and I'm watching, I'm like, wow, they got a lot of good things. If things fall into place, you could see this team rattling off a lot of wins and making it really tough on an opposing team, because they got speed, they got defense, they can pitch it, they got successful bullpen arms with young bullpen arms that are good arms. You know, so there's a lot of things, you know, you haven't seen that with the Cubs over the last couple of years. You know, and then you had a guy, you know, coming out of the bell, coming off the bench, that's 40 years old, and he's working with everybody on hitting, and you're like, I like it. I'm liking what I'm seeing, you know, because he's got some things that he can bring to the table that are just unique. So it's pretty cool.
What did you think of Shota Imanaga's first outing, and how much confidence do you have in him and his ability to replicate the kind of success he enjoyed last year?
I have a lot of confidence in him. I don't say this about pitchers too often, because you know how I feel about pitchers. they're a necessary evil for our game. Someone's got to put the ball in place so we can play, right, Mikey? You know, I'm like, but he's a baseball player, and he sees the game. He's a baseball guy, and you can tell. And he likes to play, and he's got that, you know, that energy about him, and I love that. And the thing that's making pitchers real successful in the big leagues right now, he has all those. He's got command. He's got location of his fastball up in the zone and in, where he's getting a lot of chase with that, and foul balls and routine fly balls. And he's got the split that's making it difficult. You know, as you know, almost a two-pitch pitcher, he can really pitch in the league with some good location and moving the ball around. I expect him to have the same type of success he did last year.
You know, whenever we talk about the difference from one year to the next, we kind of focus in on the fact that they blew 26 saves a year ago. And if you can have that, all of a sudden you're a, you know, 90-win club. How does the bullpen look? And I kind of like the intangible thing you were telling us. How does it look top to bottom? Not necessarily who's in what role or who's, but they made a lot of changes. They added a lot of arms. How does it look, generally speaking?
I think it looks much, much better than it did. You have a closer now that has something to pitch for, because you brought him in and he didn't close last year, and he wanted to, and they brought in the elite closer, right, at the Astros did with the lefty they brought in. Now, he's one of those guys that he's got something to prove, but he's pitched in the league a long time, and he's had a lot of success in October, not just the regular season, but in October. And that really helps the young guys now that are right in line, right in behind him. So now all of a sudden you're looking at Presley having an effect that pushes some guys into roles that are going to be much more palatable, if you're Craig Counsell, to seeing young kids pitching in the sixth and seventh and eighth, then handing them the ball going, oh, he really hasn't been in this situation in Dodger Stadium trying to get three outs against, you know, three superstar players, but here you go, here's the ball. Now you got that veteran guy who you go, good batter, there, he's going to throw the ball over the plate, we're going to take our chances, and we got a shot at winning today. That's that thing that changes.
You look at the pitching staff, Coom, and Matthew Boyd is here. Drew Smyly is not. I wonder, is he replacing Smyly, or what do they have in store for Matthew Boyd, and what role do you envision him playing?
I think Boyd's going to be in the rotation. I really do. He's a guy, as long as he's healthy, David, I've seen him pitch against us last year, and he was healthy, and he was very good at times. His biggest issue is just staying healthy, being on the field. He's got he does a couple things really well. That he's got a very good changeup that kind of fades off to the righties, and he's got a fastball that he throws back and forth off of those that come out looking the same to me, and that's very effective. But when you can pitch inside with that, like Steele does, and like Hicks did the other day, Wicker throwing fastballs inside, I think all of a sudden now you're like, okay. That's good. So it would not surprise me if he's healthy, he's in the rotation.
I'm curious when you talk about a guy, you know, we know Nicky Lopez because he's been in town and he is from here. But when you talk about a guy like Brujan, I saw him working with Sammy the other day. How does he look in terms of challenging Lopez for that roster spot?
Very good. That's a tough one. I think you're looking at guys, you know, Brujan is they brought him in. That's going to be that last spot on the roster.
Yeah.
And when you start looking, okay, it could come down to just who's healthy, right, Mike? You just don't know. You got to play out camp now and see what's going to end up happening. You know, does Nicky make the team because – you know, he's playing really well. Does he not? Does Brujan make the team? Brujan can do some different things, too. They both can. They can both play shortstop. They can both run around. Brujan's probably got a little more pop in his bat, but he strikes out a lot. So I think for both guys, you know, it could come down to who's just healthy, you know, and you just got to see, you got to play out spring training. But that'll be one of them last couple day, I believe, decisions for the Cubs.
Justin Turner arrived, brought his bat with him. We saw that already, Coom. He can hit, falling out of bed. You wonder, though, when he talks about not having to play third base, and maybe he won't have to, and that'll be everything will play out as usual. But what do you think? Is he an option there if Matt Shaw is late to the party or for whatever reason isn't ready? Do you think that the Cubs in the back of their minds, is that plan B or is that plan – you know, doesn't have a letter attached because it's too far down the road?
I would say it would definitely be something you would look at. There's no doubt. You know, the question would be, David, okay, do you want to put the 40-year-old guy at third base for 2 weeks, let's say, every day, and run the risk of him getting hurt and then being on the disabled list? Or do you play him at first, or maybe you play him a third a day, and then he DHs, and then he gets a day off, and you monitor that enough to keep him healthy. But in a pinch, I don't see why Counts wouldn't play him a third if he doesn't have other options. You know, right now you've got some utility guys that give you options. But, you know, Turner, he looks fine. He doesn't look any different than he did, you know, wearing a Dodger uniform over the last 4 or 5 years. So, you know, but he's a guy you really want to keep on your active roster. So you really want to watch that, to me, and how much you're going to play him maybe at third base.
It's obviously so early in the season and everything, but we have a good feel for what the outfield's going to look like. How do you think Seiya Suzuki will react to being most likely a DH? We had this conversation with Frank Thomas one time where he talked about how difficult – he was a first baseman – and how difficult it was for him to become a DH. And you think of him as a DH, and he had great years as a DH, but he said it was not an easy transition. What's it like for a guy that has always been an outfielder, and will he play in the outfield in Japan? Is he okay with being the DH for the international opener?
I would say he's going to DH. He's going to DH a lot. He's going to play some outfield. He's going to play a little left. He's going to play a little right. He's going to, you know, when the guys get a break. But you're going to see Pap and Tucker playing in the outfield regularly. So, you know, I think he's already come to that conclusion. That's been, you know, Cubs weren't shy in telling them what they expected and what was going to happen. So I think you've got to kind of get your mindset ready for that. I'll agree to this, though. I think DHing is very difficult to do for a position player that isn't just getting a day off and he's DHing. You know, he's getting a day off from playing. So he's going to have to find a routine that helps him get himself prepared for an at-bat. The guy that was the best I ever saw that I ever played with was Paul Molitor. Paul, he was a great defensive player, but because of injury, second half of his career, he didn't, you know, play in the field much. But he would, Paul, he had a routine, and he just could walk up there, and he was going to get two hits, and you're just like, yeah, oh, I'm, you know. So it's not an easy job, though. I would agree to what Frank had to say also. I, you know, played against Frank for many, many, many years. It's a tough thing to do.
Great stuff, Coom. Really appreciate your time, and love talking to you.
Have a great weekend. Enjoy Zach today.
Yeah.
We will. Yep. I'm looking forward to getting back on the mic. And you know, I've been out at the ballpark the last few days, so it'll be fun. It'll be good to see Zach fresh out of DePaul basketball, so we're going to have a good time and surprise today. Boys, have a great weekend.
All right. Take care. That is the Coom Dog. Always a great man to talk to.
He'll be there with Zach today on the call starting 1:55. Cubs and Rangers spring training action and Cubs spring training games on the Score. Sponsored by Sloan, the leader in smart water and commercial restroom solutions.
We asked the question earlier, how many Big Ten teams are going to make the tournament? Well, Illinois certainly has to be one. We'll talk to Brad Underwood next. Mully and Hall on the Score.
And Illinois is going to snap that three-game skid with a 20-point win here over the Iowa Hawkeyes. Brad Underwood is going to be much happier.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Always fun to talk to the Illini head coach. Brad Underwood joins us now on The Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Good morning, Coach. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Good morning.
Nice win. Congratulations on the win over Iowa. You made some adjustments with the starting lineup. Are you guys physically feeling better? I mean, I know the flu went through the team and there was an illness, and that was a tough stretch there trying to get through that.
Yeah, that's an understatement. yeah, we're as healthy. Merez Johnson's still out with the fractured wrist. He's on the mend, but just literally in terms of the health, and I hope the flu's run its course. It was, you know, we've had seven guys with it, so
wow.
And it wasn't just it wasn't the 24-hour variety. It was, you know, the bad stuff. So, yeah, we're as healthy as we've been, and the important piece is we've got guys with some energy, and then guys able to practice, so we can actually make some changes and try to get better.
You had the flu and you had the virus go through your team. That had to be physically challenging. You had the loss last Saturday in New York, which had to be mentally challenging just to get past that, Coach. What does it say about your team that you responded by beating Iowa the way that you did, and how did that make you feel about what's ahead in March?
Well, I think New York was the perfect storm. That was, one, they're good, and secondly, it's just the end of five games in 13 days with the Iowa game, not practicing, not having guys, not being able to truly get better. But we did a lot of good things in that game. We just didn't shoot it very well. But it was I've said many times, I love coaching this team. This team is so receptive to learning. They're great listeners. And we came back. We got home at 2:30 in the morning. We were on the court at 2:00 in the afternoon. And, you know, it was either that point of, okay, I know we need some rest, but we also have to make some changes. And we have Thomas Lobb in practice now. He's in as good a place as he's been with the mono and then the flu. And so we went wholesale. We went 2.5, almost 3 hours on Sunday in practice and made some pretty substantial changes for this point of the season. But we've been trying to do that for a month. We just couldn't do it. We just didn't feel it was right to try to do it. And our guys picked up on it. Iowa's one of the best offensive teams in the country, and we held them to 61 points. So, you know, some things worked, but it's a tribute to our guys and their ability to stay connected and stay focused.
Obviously, Michigan up next. I I'm not watching every game in the Big Ten, but it seems like every time I turn on my TV, someone's launching a shot with the buzzer going off and knock it down. I mean, the Michigan State full core, whatever that thing was.
What a week.
It's been crazy watching your conference.
Well, the league's the best it's been in my 8 years. You know, top to bottom. And, you know, it's one of those leagues that on any single night you can, no matter who's in, who's out, if there's an injury, if you can go lose. And, you know, you look at everybody's gone through a little spell. You know, Michigan State lost 3 of 4, you know, went out to the LA schools and got beat. And, you know, it's just an incredibly well-coached league. The league has really good players. The freshmen in this league are exceptional. But it is a night in and night out. And, of course, the venues are just so tough to play. So, yeah, you're going to see, you know, you could literally see anybody win that Big Ten tournament.
Coach, I think one of the more intriguing players to come onto the scene in the Big Ten this year has been your guy, Kasperis Jakučionis. Where did you find him? How impressed have you been by him? And what is his ceiling?
Yeah, his ceiling's untouched. You know, I think the world is a pretty small place when it comes to basketball. And in today's stuff, and we watch a lot of EuroLeague games. I've literally got staff over there every month. We're recruiting over there. We're watching the kids as early as the age of 16. So he's been on the radar for a long time. As soon as the season was over last year, made a quick trip over there. I watched him in a tournament that was a loaded field. It was tremendous young players. You know, we had been recruiting him, but it really stepped up at that point. You know, Thomas Love was a guy, again, who's been on the scene for a long time. With the changes in NIL, that those guys have become much more available to universities. So he's been incredible to coach. He's a student of the game. He's just turned 18. He's really young, but his ceiling is extremely high. He hasn't touched it yet.
You know, it's kind of wild to think about the season that you guys have had, and as you say, the Big Ten being as good as it is. Do you think that the NCAA committee will take that all into account and put all of that into perspective as they prepare, you know, as you guys come down to it? I mean, you know, you have the flu run through your team, you have a bad loss against Duke. I think that's all understandable, provided everyone is well aware of that.
Yeah, we're 20 in the net ranking.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we've played just as hard and challenging a schedule. We played, you know, 4 or 5 SEC teams. You know, so we play people in the non-league. The Duke game didn't hurt us. As crazy as that sounds, it's a loss. But, you know, we didn't move in the net. And the net's what is the tournament uses. You play people so that you can keep your net ranking very high. And you're going to play, and as good as our league is, you know, it's going to be a 10 to 12, 13-bid league. And when you play quality opponents every night, you're going to get beat. And so it's not about the losses as much as it is continuing to get better. It's been a challenging year. I think that, you know, when you lose one of your two best players for extended time, like we did with Mono, and then he comes back, I think all of that stuff falls into play and consideration. But, you know, it's why you play competitive people in the non-league, and know that, you know, we got a top 15 offense. We took some hits defensively. We're getting better in that area because we've been top 40 most of the year. So now it's, you know, it's just analytics. It's about continuing to grow and get healthy. And you know, as you move it in tournament time, anything can happen.
Well, we saw that last year with your team, Coach, and I think when you look at how you were, you needed to rebuild your roster and maybe take, I don't know, was it a different approach offensively with this group this season? And, you know, you're shooting a ton of threes. Sometimes they don't always make a ton of threes, and that's, we see that with the Bulls. You know, that's a change in style. You got to get hot to make that worth that change in style. So how different are you this year heading into March than maybe the team you had a year ago?
Oh, well, first of all, we got 10 new guys, and last year we were one of the oldest teams in the country. This year we're the youngest, and, you know, at the A4 level, and we're extremely young. And to play differently, yes. Everybody worries about whether the ball goes in or not. I don't. We're one of the top two-point field goal shooting teams in the country. We get that because we shoot threes. The thing that we've done has been offensive rebound, and you know, it's you got to go chase your misses, you got to get more opportunities. For us, it's a little bit about math and being able to do it, play percentages, you know, and water always finds its level. And you know, in games where we've made threes, we were one of the only teams in the country to make more than 15 threes in four different games. So you know, it's been really good to us. We're a top 15 team with all of the adjustments, and not having Caspers for two games, not having Tommy for multiple games. So, you know, we're different, yes. We've been different on the defensive side. We've just had to make some tweaks on that.
When you talk about the tournament coming up, and obviously the Big Ten tournament is what matters, and you can determine your faith there as well, your fate, excuse me. But when you talk about conferences, you say the Big Ten's been as good as it is. We keep hearing the SEC say they need to get 14 teams in, which seems insane.
They probably should.
But that's what I was going to say. They are really good top to bottom. How do you project how many Big Ten teams need to be in? It seems like the league, as you mentioned, has been sensational throughout the year.
Yeah, and I think in these super conferences, there's no doubt we've seen the SEC, and we scrimmaged Ole Miss in an exhibition, and you know, it's that league's good, and we've played, you know, four of the better teams in that league. So, you know, that is a very, very old league. All the top teams in there are very, very old, so they're, you know, I think they're very good. You know, the Big Ten's second. And it's you look. We had an incredible non-conference schedule and a ton of success in non-league games, and I think you reward that. And when you're playing quad one and quad two games every night, you are going to get beat some. And it's not about the wins and losses as much as it is just the competitive balance of your league. And you know, we had, you know, Minnesota who goes out west and beats the two LA schools. And it's just, you know, Penn State's had some injuries and they're playing better. They just go on the road and win in Minnesota. Anybody can beat anybody, and that helps our league. And I don't think we don't have any real bad losses and league wise, and that helps. And, you know, I think it's at least a 10, 12, 13 bid league. It's much more than wins and losses. It's about the computers and the nets and the analytics behind it.
Great stuff, Coach. Thanks a ton. Great catching up with you.
Best
really
of luck, Coach.
It. Yeah.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
That is Brad Underwood. That's a lot of teams making the tournament.
10 to 12.
Ten. Wow.
That's more than I thought he would say.
Wow.
That's more than I think they'll get. So, but it is fun to consider.
So we got 26 teams already. If there's
the two conferences. Welcome to the SEC / Big Ten Invitational.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, it's pretty special. All right, we've got our guy. We're gonna bring in Mike Palm. Maybe we should ask him who's going to win the Oscars. Are you big on the Oscars?
I'm not big on the Oscars this year. Maybe we should ask him what Matthew Stafford's going to do.
Matthew Stafford, we got breaking news on the score, and breaking news on the score is brought to you by Wildfire. It's my favorite restaurant. Join Wildfire Restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating memories for Mully.
Pro Football Talk reporting that Matthew Stafford and the Raiders may have a contract agreement.
Yeah, they apparently, according to the headline on PFT, our buddy Mike Florio, Raiders Matthew Stafford have found common ground on a new contract. That, is it a coincidence that Tom went skiing with the guy? Come on now.
Just a coincidence, and don't say otherwise, or else I might accost you.
All right. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 the score.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, proudly presents the star of our show,
Mike Palm. Vice President of Operations of Circa, the D and Golden Gate.
Vegas, baby, Vegas!
Twitter, at Mike Palm Circa.
Why don't I take you somewhere that you've never been?
Where's that?
Vegas?
Let's head to Vegas with Mike Palm, sponsored by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be, with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Remember, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
I don't care if the sun
Mully
shines.
And Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It's our friend in the desert, Mike Palm. Great man he is. Joins us on the Score Hotline, brought to you by Turo, your all-weather tire, Turo.com. Mike, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Good morning, fellas. How are you? We had a exciting week here at Circa as the Blackhawks were in town. I thought that was terrific. They had 15 of their executives and about 50 of their sponsors. I got to meet and sit at dinner with Pat Foley on Wednesday night. So that was a real thrill. I actually made some remarks to the group. I had thought that Seth Jones was going to do it, but I filled in.
Well, yeah, he decided he had plenty to say already this week. He had said enough, Mike. But what a treat sitting next to the great Pat Foley. The Hawks nearly pulled one out, 6-5. They got it close and then end up 7-5 losers. That had to be fun, though.
Oh, it was a terrific game. Highly entertaining. We took the kids to it. So, I mean, on both sides. Yeah, and for Blackhawks fans to come close is exceeding expectations.
So true. I'm super curious, Mike. How do you guys handle the Academy Awards? Do you take wagers on that? It feels like everything is already projected, and you know who's kind of going to win. Are people allowed to bet on that? Is there any interest in booking anything with betting on the Oscars?
No, and we can't.
Oh, you can't.
In none of the states that we operate is it allowed. Now, it's allowed in New Jersey. So people that are operating in New Jersey, like DraftKings, Johnny Avello does a nice job of booking it there. But where we operate, we can't, and I don't think that we would want to either.
Right. Yeah, it seems fairly obvious because there are like 15 different award shows, and they always give out the awards to the same people.
Yeah, they're all predictive of the different categories, and you have all this data that leads you to already know.
Mike, there's a report that Matthew Stafford and the Raiders have an agreement. What do you think that does to their chances?
Well, I love it if it's true. There's a couple things that are head-scratching here, Dave. I mean, why do the Rams want to give him? I get the finances, but I think he's still a top-five quarterback. They came within 15 yards of beating the Eagles in Philadelphia in the divisional round.
I know.
And the other comment I had, and talking about the division you guys are in, the NFC North, why wouldn't the Vikings go all in? I know McCarthy's their guy in the future, but he's had two knee surgeries before he's even played a snap. It's really exciting for the Raiders. The problem is you're playing in the division with great quarterbacks and great coaches, right? So it's going to take some time. A Stafford deal, what I'm hearing, the 2 years possibly for $100 million. Is that enough time for Pete Carroll to turn it around? He says it's a win now. Everywhere he's been, he's won in the third or fourth year. They really don't have the luxury of that. But it's such a tough division. But, boy, would it make their product a heck of a lot more entertaining. They've gone with no quarterback now for 3 years to having a top-five quarterback, if it's true.
Great stuff, Mike. Thank you. We really appreciate your time, as always.
Have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too, guys. Thanks a lot.
That's Mike Palm, our man in Vegas. He, with Circa, does tons of work.
Yeah, there. That's fun that he got a chance to participate in the Blackhawks trip out there. Didn't end or go the way they wanted it to. If they could play the first period, they gave up 5 goals and 15 shots.
Yeah.
And then they pulled the goalie.
I mean,
Mrazek out, Soderblom in, and 7-5.
Yeah, but I mean, the one thing here's the problem.
With Bedard not even having a shot on goal.
But if I'm watching the Hawks and they start losing, I'm turning off the TV because I don't expect them to come back. See? Brent Fletcher is going to join us from Chicago Sports.
Chicago Sports Network. She's covering the White Sox out in Arizona.
And we got some great audio with her, and we'll play that for you next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.